Podcast. This is Elizabeth Collins, your host, and this is episode 137. This is probably going to be the hardest podcast I've ever had to do. I don't want to do it, but I think I have to. For one thing, I'm hoping it'll help me. Don't know how it's going to. Maybe it will help others, maybe it won't. I don't know, but I think I need to do it. If I don't, I won't be being honest. I'll be hiding something from myself. I didn't want to put this out there. I was running away from it, but I'm going to do it today. So what's happened is I'm doing a master's degree in audiology. Audiology is the study of hearing. It's not the study of, it's a clinical practice. So you are a clinician, you're not a doctor. I mean, unless you get a PhD or whatever, but it's not a medical field. You can't prescribe medication, for example. You can only refer, but you do audiometric testing on people's hearing. So you're testing people for hearing loss. You can prescribe hearing aids, which is not medication, that's equipment, and those are aids, you know, and you work a lot with hearing aids. And you evaluate, it's all ages, from children to adults. There's all different kinds of hearing loss. I'm learning so much about hearing loss. It's not what you think, I bet, unless you know about it. When you go deaf, it doesn't mean that you just, everything gets turned down, and then when you wear a hearing aid, it's like you wear your glasses and everything just gets clear again. Hearing loss is very complicated, but anyway, well, that's beside the point. So it's a master's degree, and I saved up all of my money that I could last year, living on very, very frugally, and I quit my job. I had this job security. The job that I had, I was comfortable with to a certain extent. It was a government job. I was working with social workers, who are wonderful, completely unappreciated, underpaid, and just horribly treated people, women mostly. Amazing people, I miss them terribly. I was just doing administrative work, so I was processing paperwork. So there was no conflict. It wasn't like I was working in a restaurant or a clothing store that sold animal products or anything like that. So I was very comfortable there. Didn't necessarily agree with all the government policies that I was working under, and all those kinds of things, given that it was a child protection agency. But, you know, and there's all those inherent problems with funding and institutionalized racism and definitely patriarchy and all that stuff that comes into it. But all in all, it was definitely had job security. I mean, it was very secure, low paid, but it was the most money I'd ever made. But that's not hard. I've never made very good money at all, but it was very low paid in the grand scheme of things. And I think I even did a podcast where I talked about how financially I really feel unstable, and I'm just on the edge because Auckland's so expensive, and the place that I'm living now is no great shakes, but it's certainly a home and a roof, and it's my own. I don't have to share it with anybody. Like, I share the building, but I don't have to share my living space with anyone. Shebby's very happy here. She's very safe here. But, you know, just in the future, you know, I don't think I'm going to be able to stay here forever. Who knows what's going to happen? Maybe the landlord. The bottom line is I'm precarious. So I thought, oh, let me just go for this field. It's really well paid. I'll still be helping people. I mean, you do help people when you're an audiologist. It's life-changing when people's hearing is addressed. I mean, it can be life-changing for people to have some recourse, to work with them, and all those kinds of things. And so I went into the course and I got in, miracle of miracles, because it was very, very hard to get in. I don't even know why they let me in, to be honest, but I managed to sneak in the door. I'm the oldest by about 20 years minimum and all that stuff, and I'm holding my own. It's one of the most stressful, hardest things I've ever done. I cannot describe the workload. As I really generally get to bed around 3 or 4 in the morning, and that includes weekends. I'm constant. It's just, the workload is incredible. I guess this is a master's degree and that's the way it is. I've been managing. I've even learned some physics and brushed up on my maths. And I was pretty sure I was going to fail that course, and I actually did really well in my exam. So I'm doing great. The problem that I'm facing is that more and more as I get into the course, I realize, and I mentioned this briefly in my last podcast, that animal research, animal experimentation, is a huge part of this field. I don't know enough about other medical fields, like, I don't know, like occupational therapists or stuff like that, speech language therapists. I don't know if their field uses a lot of animal research. I know that animal research, animal experimentation is done and has been done for, I don't know how many years, hundreds, centuries, I don't know, lots, a long, long time. And because I know it's sort of a medical field related, and there is a neuroscience, we're studying a neuroscience component because we study the ear organ, and then there's also the nerve fibers that lead to the brain. So before I got into the course, I wrote to the professor of the neuroscience class. It's only one class. The rest of the classes are fine. And I said, is there any dissection or vivisection as a requirement for this course in the entire 2 years? And he wrote back and said, no, there is no vivisection or dissection. However, a lot of the research papers are based on animal experiments. They never say animal experiments. They always use words like animal models or animal studies, but it's animal experiments, vivisection, and obviously dissection and experimentation. And I said, oh, yes. And I was like, yes, I understand that. I know that that's the way of the world. I know that animal experimentation is the basis for all medical, fields, and it's a legacy, and it's there. And I did not think to myself, let me just find out if it's still happening now, because in this field, because I sort of naively assumed that when he was talking about research papers, he was talking about, decades ago in the 50s and stuff. And yes, I would have to look at that data address it and things, but I didn't investigate whether it's still going on now. Well, it is still going on now, and so much of the literature in this neuroscience class refers to animal experiments. So we'll be looking at the model of, say, a synaptic response, of the hearing organ, and it'll be from a guinea pig or a mouse or a cat, or they'll talk about owls. Well, owls don't have this, reptiles don't have that, and I'm like, oh, okay, so you're experimenting on owls and reptiles to find out what they don't have. And then, of course, they don't know if it's exactly the same in humans, so a lot of the data, it's like, the potential was like this, I don't know if I'm using this right, I'm just learning this stuff, but it's like 80 megavolts positive for this fluid. And I said, well, I thought you couldn't be definitive about that. I got, because he said, we're not sure. And then he said, oh, no, we don't know in humans. And I was like, oh, right. So I've been faced with this in this class, and I've been starting to question myself whether I should be involved in this and how complicit I'm being and what am I doing here, and that it's not vegan. And then the speciesist, selfish part of me, which I'm faced with every day, is saying, but, you quit your job, you have put everything on the line, you have put your whole future on this, and I could rationalize my way so much. I mean, I could sit here all day and rationalize it. Oh, but my animals will think, okay, if I graduate and I get a really good job, I could be a force for good, and I could support non-animal research to happen, and I could do all this stuff, in other words, the ends justify the means. That's what I could do. I could sit here and say that, and I'll be able to have a decent place to live, so I'll be able to adopt more animals and not worry about paying for their vet care. I'll be able to do it, and all the right reasons. And then I'm like, am I really complicit? I mean, I'm referring to this work. It's sort of forced upon me, but am I really, does that really mean that I'm taking part in it? If I become a clinician and I go to the clinic and I apply this theory, and some of it was based on animal research, in other words, I apply this theory, like I do a hearing test and I say, oh, well, this is an indication that you're the particular little nerves in your inner ear, da 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 da, and the information I'm giving is based on animal. Oh, excuse me. Sorry, it's based on animal research. Then, what does that make me? What am I doing? And I don't have the answer. I mean, it seems, on the one side, it seems really clear cut. I shouldn't be doing this. If I take part in this field, where there's, a lot of animal research in the field of audiology, and it's shocking the amount of animal research that's in the field of audiology. I didn't realize how extensive it was, and we're talking right up to the present day. And I'm being assigned a paper to write on hidden hearing loss, which is this phenomenon. And the research is based on animal experiments. So the entire concept of hidden hearing loss, this concept, is based on experiments that they did on mice and guinea pigs, and maybe rabbits. Mice and guinea pigs, I think. And they did these experiments on them and said, oh, look at this. That might be happening in humans as well. And I have to write a paper about how, as a clinician, how do I look for hidden hearing loss, and what would I, how would we test for it? There are no tests for it in the clinic. We don't have a test that can test. Well, there might be, and this happened recently. So up until this paper, I was in class, and there was all these, there'd be a diagram in the book. We had to read this book, and it's part of the curriculum. And then it would say, frequency response in the inner ear of a cat. And I would read that and say, and that was from like 1989 or whatever. And yes, it was awful. And I'm thinking, well, this is completely irrelevant. I mean, I don't really care what the frequency response of the inner ear of a cat is. I won't be seeing cats in my clinic. But I could sort of, in a way, dismiss it. I could say, oh, well, this was just, they're putting that there, because they did have one for human as well. So they were comparing them. And I'm thinking, why are you even comparing them? It's just so pointless. But in terms of my own involvement, I just sort of ignored it. I said, well, but now that I'm realizing how much of the field is, I mean, if I'm with patients, and then there's this breakthrough, something or other, and I don't know where it's come from, it's like, oh, well, look, here's this new machine, we can now test for this. And I'll be, as a clinician, I'll be great, because I'm only dealing with humans. When I graduate, I don't even have to think about the animal research anymore. I don't have to get involved in it. I can only concentrate on epidemiological studies. In fact, I wrote to the... So when I started to see all of the animal research in the literature, the extent of it, and when I started to realize that I might have to comment on some of it, I started to get worried, and I started to doubt, and I started, this is where my problems began. It feels like I've been in this forever. It's been so incredibly overwhelming, the course, let alone this, but it's been hitting me just very recently because of this particular paper, because we were assigned another assignment before this one. We haven't had to do yet, but we were talked to about it, and we were allowed to pick the subject matter based on either physiology or something to do with, so either physiology and anatomy or something. And he said, you can pick which heading you want. And so I wrote to the professor and I said, I don't have a preference for either. The only preference I have is that I want my paper that you're assigning me to review. I have to review this piece of work. I said, I want it to be with zero reference to any animal experimentation, dissection, vivisection, nothing. And he said, that's very easy to accommodate. I'm happy to do that. And he's provided me with a paper that's completely just based on human epidemiological studies or whatever. And I thought, well, that went well. And I kind of moved on. But then this last assignment, which I was assigned a while ago, but I haven't even had a chance to look at, and it's now due in a week. And I've barely been able to get started because I only got started halfway through the week. And I started to read and I realized, it hit me, that this entire concept is entirely based on studies that they've done on animals, and they're starting to do investigations in humans and seeing how that it works. But I just thought, I can't deal with this. This is wrong, and I should not be doing this. And I spoke to the professor about it because I'm very open, and I posted on the Facebook group of the class. I'm in class with 13 other people, and we have a Facebook group where we share, you know, just stuff about the course. You know, we're in contact with each other. I mean, I see them more than I see anybody. I don't see my own family ever, but I see these people, so we've become quite close. And I posted it there because I was really struggling, and I said, I'm really struggling with the amount of animal experimentation in the course subject matter, and I think that you know, part of me thinks I should drop out of the course, and if I don't, then I have to live with it. I know that I'm doing something ethically wrong, and I'm the one who has to live with it, but it's very hard. And I said, I am talking to another vegan, and I am speaking to another vegan who's going to become a human doctor and is going through the same thing, because a lot of the, you know, medical field is, they use animal, you know, pictures of cells and things, and stuff comes from animals. But I think probably in the medical field there's a lot more based on humans. I don't know, but apparently it's the same thing. And so it is helpful to talk, and I've talked to Truk as well, who's in Australia, just venting. And I even just talked to my mother and said, Mum, you know, I'm thinking of dropping out. And she said, yes, she understands the dilemma. She didn't say, what are you doing? That's, you know, she knows me well enough not to try to say, oh, don't worry, don't be silly, it doesn't matter. She said, oh, okay, that is a dilemma for you. And so that's where I'm at. And I spoke to the professor and I said, you know, I'm really struggling with this content. You did warn me, I asked, and you warned me. I was just naive. I didn't realize how extensive it was. I didn't research how extensive it was before I got accepted into the course. And I didn't check out that it was still going on, which of course was stupid of me, because of course it is. But I swear, I just didn't consider that. I just would never dream of it. Because I didn't know enough about audiology for a start, you know. And so that's what's going on. And I said, you know, I have these options. I said, my first option is that I can drop out of the course, and just be done with it, and just, that's it. My second option is I can refuse to do the paper and fail the course. And I said, my third option is I can just bottle this all up and not say anything to anybody and just do it and then just be quiet about it and just endure it and just do what I know is wrong. Or I can talk about it and let you know what I'm going through and let you know what I'm considering and why. And he said, well, there is a fourth option, and that's you can just focus on the human clinical side of this thing. And just, you know, you are going to have to make a reference to the fact that these people who discovered this so-called hidden hearing loss did so. I mean, because we don't even know if it happens in humans. We don't know. I mean, they can guess, but they don't know. But it seems to be pretty obvious that it does, just clinically, because the way people describe their experience, you see, which is why this probably. So anyway, and he said, I'm willing for you to, you know, do that, and he said, you know, don't, you know, you've got a bright future, and so I said, okay, and I said, you know, this is where I'm at, and that's where I'm at, and then I've been thinking, I do not want to put this out into the vegan community, because I know they're just going to say, you need to drop out, you know, what are you doing, this is wrong, you can't even call yourself a vegan if you keep doing this course and doing this field of audiology where there's tons of animal experimentation in this field of audiology. And then I think about other, and I'm thinking, but wait, but there must be other vegans around the world who've studied biology and medicine and who've been forced to write these papers and to read this literature, and what do they do? But the thing is, if I was going to become a doctor, I feel like it's because I would be a really good example as a vegan doctor. You know, I think vegan doctors, I think we need them. We need vegan doctors. We need vegan vets. You know, because there's all of this ridiculous, you know, stuff in the medical field, diet-wise and stuff. I mean, they can bust all the myths, they can address it. I mean, I think vegan doctors can do a world of good. But a vegan audiologist, I mean, there's really nothing to do with diet or, you know, any of that stuff. I mean, there is some. I mean, they might say, but they haven't really made a correlation between diet and hearing loss. And I was thinking, oh, maybe I could do a thesis on, you know, maybe I could find out, you know, maybe my master's thesis could be how, you know, eating animal products is bad for your hearing. Wouldn't that be great? And then I was like, that would justify, you know, nothing justifies it. And I'm really struggling. And I actually, I really don't go on Facebook apart from just to see my group, my university class, because I'm mostly studying and doing clinics and all those kinds of things, and I'm so busy. But there's a video that, well, Professor Francione has a Facebook page, and there's another professor, Gary Steiner, and they're doing videos together. Just they address issues, and I actually wrote to them and said, can you address this issue? Because I mustn't be the only one, but I don't see a lot of talk about this in the vegan community. I don't see a lot of vegan medical students or biology students or physiotherapy students, if that even applies, or, you know, occupational therapy students or speech language students. I mean, optometrists, you know, I mean, it must be in all of those fields, surely. And I don't see a lot of discussion about it. And maybe that's because, you know, people are freaking out, because I could drop out. I mean, it could be done. It wouldn't be the end of my life. I'd just have to find some other crappy low-paid job, but hey, whatever. I could sleep at night. So it's really, really tough, and I'm really, really struggling, and I do not know what to do. And if I don't drop out, well, then that means something. I don't know if I want to face what that means. So I'm hemming and hawing about what to do, and I need to make a decision soon, because the longer I leave it, the worse it's going to be for me financially. Because right now I've got some savings left, which I was planning to live on for the rest of the year. Or at least as much as I could before I had to start borrowing more money. And I could, you know, I've got a sick mouse at the moment. He's just not doing well at all with his OCD scratching, and there are some vet visits, and I am using my savings for that. But if I was on a benefit, and just, I wouldn't be able to afford the vet at all, and they would not give me money for that. So I don't want to wait too long. I have no idea what job I'm going to get. I could try and reapply at the same place I used to work. If there was a job opening there, I'm sure they'd have me back. I'd have a legitimate reason. It's not because I'm failing. I can pass this course. I can get this degree. I'm realizing that now. For a few weeks there, I wasn't sure if I was even going to pass. I was like, I am not going to be able to handle this. It is so hard. But now that I've passed that physics test, which I thought I was going to fail, and I actually did really well in it because I worked so hard, and I'm thinking, actually, I can do this. But now what's coming up is this problem, and I don't know what to do, and I don't expect anybody listening to know what to do. In fact, I expect a lot of people listening to say, why are you even asking this question? The answer is obvious. It's just so, so hard. So I was hoping that if I talked about it, I could help myself maybe figure out what to do. I did not want to put this out there. I wanted it to be my dirty little secret, and then I could make the decision on my own. And then if I keep going through the course, you know, and I become an audiologist, then it's only my, you know, I'm the only one who's going to really know, and, you know, nobody else could know, and I could just say, no, I'm vegan, and it would be my, you know, secret. But I just can't do that. And I also do think that it's important that we talk about these things, no matter how hard they are to talk about. I know that this can be justified away, and especially in terms of doctors, and I understand that, but I don't know if I can. I mean, I know that I could be an influence. I would definitely be an anti-vivisection influence. I mean, it's not, like, one of the things I was really clear to when I was talking to my professor, who has debated anti-vivisectionists, being a vivisector himself, and has heard it, and he says, you know, and I doubt he's heard our position. I actually just watched the debate with Gary Francione and Dario Ringach, and I learned a lot from that. But I mean, and I learned it all from Gary Francione. So, you know, I said to my professor, I said, listen, I want to be clear, I'm not an anti-vivisectionist. I mean, I am, but I said, I'm a vegan. It's all the same to me. I oppose all animal use. And again, I want to be really clear that, you know, when this comes up, it's not going to be because I'm an anti-vivisectionist, it's going to be because I'm an anti-all-animal-use thing. And, you know, if you take a person who thinks nothing about eating and wearing and using animals because they taste good and because it's convenient, of course they're going to defend the use of animals in biomedical research. I mean, Gary Francione said it, it's the one use that's not transparently frivolous, etc., etc. So that would be the focus. If I had a chance to debate this professor who said he would be happy to debate this, that would be my focus. I'd say, you know, I'm talking to somebody who thinks nothing about eating and using and wearing animals, so I don't expect to even remotely be able to, we're trying to run before we can walk. But I would talk about the extrapolation and the moral justification and la la la. And in fact, I would talk, if you want to talk about vivisection, but I'd make it very clear to him, the way Gary Francione did Dario Ringbach, that your version of necessity in science is a really hard one to take. You know, how can we trust it? Because you're going to go down to the restaurant later on today and have a cheese omelette. So, what, you know, your version of what's sort of necessary when it comes to animal use is pretty suspect, you know, given your baseline criteria, your daily actions, you know. And so that's what we always have to remember. You know, we have to remember that we have to focus on animal use as a broad matter. Veganism is the trivial uses, not that we don't focus on vivisection, we focus on it all at once. And we acknowledge to them that, you know, the one use that isn't transparently frivolous is vivisection, however, it's still morally wrong, and then you can go into that. But you have to be really clear to them, you know, I understand that your view on non-human animals is completely different, essentially and fundamentally, from my view, because you're still eating them, you know, using them, wearing them. So any conversation, you know, you have to be smart about it, and I hope I could be smart about that, but that doesn't solve my dilemma. And I said to him, you know, I don't differentiate between vivisection and all other animal use, okay? So I wanted him to understand that, because he would have probably only ever encountered either non-vegan anti-vivisection people, which there are plenty, or the vegan anti-vivisection people who, they might as well not. I mean, nobody knows they're vegan because they don't focus on veganism, so it's just this very species, this single issue campaign. But I said to him, you know, the problem is that, like, if you sit there and have a steak in front of me, it's awful, and I would like to be able to influence you not to, but I'm not participating in that. But whereas I feel by doing this course and by becoming an audiologist that I am actually participating in it, because I'm studying it, and it's the basis of a lot of the neuroscience studies that I'm having to learn and pass exam questions on, and write papers on. And yes, I can focus on the human aspects, and he knows my position, and I can voice my dissent and my opposition to it, but the bottom line is, am I obligated to drop out of the course? I know that that's, when I was talking to my mother about it, and my mother is not a vegan, but she knows very clearly my position by now. And I said, you know, it's very, very hard for me to sleep at night at the moment, and I can't seem to be able to get started on this particular essay, because this is where it's all come to a head. And I said, you know, if I drop out, the consequences are really huge for me, but at least I'll be able to sleep at night. And she said, well, you know, if you drop out, it's not going to stop it from happening. And I was like, yeah, I realize that. That's not what I'm not expecting that I drop out and it's going to stop it from happening. But I won't be participating in it. I mean, if when I stopped being, when I became a vegan, I knew that it didn't stop animal use from happening. It stopped my participation in it. So that view, I don't agree with that view that, you know, unless it stops everyone else from doing it, then you should, you know, that's just silly. We all know about that. It's like, well, what difference am I going to make? And then everybody has the attitude and then nothing changes. My mum was trying to comfort me. But to her credit, I thought she would voice real objections and say, no, what are you doing? This is crazy. You can't drop out. And to her credit, she said to me that she completely understood. And she's really fought hard to support me to get into this course. She's been there for me. She is there for me. If I need money, she's there for me later on in the year. I'll use her retirement money. I mean, I'll pay her back, but that's how much she's willing to be there for me. But when I, you know, she knows me well enough, and when I told her about this, she said, oh, yes. So I said, I haven't decided, and I don't know what I'm going to decide, but part of me thinks I'm not going to, you know, that I'm going to keep going with it, and I'm going to justify it away. Because of the future, you know, because of my future. I find that very scary and shameful, and I'm all over the place. And I haven't had much of a chance to think about this because this has all sort of come to a head this last few days where I've been dealing with this and thinking about it now and having to. So I've had a look at the paper and I can obliquely refer to, but either way, it's just really hard. And I've never imagined myself to ever be in a position like this again. I mean, I imagined myself, because I'm not, I don't have as many options, you know. I have a lot more options than a lot of people, okay. I'm a very privileged person. But I don't have as many options, and I thought, that's why I sort of stayed where I was at, because at least where I was at, I was just doing admin and paperwork. I didn't have to worry about animal use, you know. I didn't ever have to be in the position where it was like, you have to in any way be complicit and like, even when they had barbecues and stuff like that, I would just voice my objection and I wouldn't participate and I wouldn't donate money to any of those causes, and I could withdraw my involvement. And you can do that very easily. Being vegan is very easy. I just, this is just something I never imagined and anticipated, and it's eating me up. And so that's why I'm doing a podcast about it, and I'm really no further along than I was when I started. But it's out there, world. You can all judge me, and I welcome you to. This is, you know, this, all of this nonsense about how we shouldn't judge. Well, you are always judging. And, you know, I don't even know if anybody, I don't know, maybe there's other, maybe there's other people out there who are struggling with it, and who are in, maybe in medical school or whatever. If you're listening, you know, I can't say to you that you are morally obligated necessarily to drop out of your medical course. I don't think it's as cut and dry as that in general. I think that we need to and if there's any insight that you can give me, that it would be great. I would appreciate any feedback from other students who are in the same position. I would appreciate it. And of course, you know, everybody's welcome to share their opinion. What I'm going to end up doing is going to end up being my decision, and anybody who listens to my podcast is going to know either way what I did and where that leaves me. I'm not going to try to justify it. I'm either going to continue with this field and then try to do it in a way that I can live with and be an advocate for human studies and epidemiological studies, or I can just walk away. and be very careful not to put myself in this position again. As for jobs, I don't know what kind of job I'm going to get. It's not an easy market out there. I do have admin skills. I mean, I've got 6 years of admin experience. So, you know, I could go and work for, you know, somewhere that doesn't have direct to do with animal use. I mean, that's not something that's impossible. I'm sure I'd be able to find another job where it wasn't selling or using or something to do with animals. You know, it was some other human-based job. So I guess those are my options. So thank you very much for listening. I hope this was helpful. I don't have a clue. I don't necessarily feel better. I feel more honest, and that's good to me. That's important to me, to be honest. And so I've posted a comment on Gary Francione's Facebook page. There's always really good discussions on there about these kinds of things. So maybe people can weigh in. I was going to post about it on my Facebook page, but I guess I'm just too cowardly to do that. Anyway, I'm sorry that this is not a uplifting podcast. It's a very, very, I'm very troubled, and I don't know what to do, and I don't really know what to say. Maybe I will revisit this depending on what decision I make. I think it is quite a complicated issue. Maybe it's not as complicated as I don't know. So, sorry it's such a drag, but, I think it needs to be done, and it's my podcast anyway, so, you know, I'll cry if I want to. So thanks, anyway, for listening. I'll be back. Bye.